Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today we open with top national news headlines from Public News Service, including the sentencing of former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort, new efforts in Congress to protect net neutrality, and more. The National Weather Service has issued a winter weather advisory for snow this week. Plus, hear about cold records recently broken across our region, and some good news that may come as no surprise after all of these rains: California's drought is finally over. In our local government report, hear about La Mesa City Council's actions on homelessness and affordable housing. Lemon Grove is set to open a long-awaited community garden, and Santee's City Council has approved money to enhance the city's brand. Hear about La Mesa Police and a partnership with Neighbors and the Ring app to help catch criminals and alert neighbors in real time. The County of San Diego has issued a warning to backyard bird owners over deadly Newcastle disease. El Cajon seeks Youth of the Year applications. And then on Destination East County, we'll have all the top festivals and events coming up in our region, including concerts by Shauna Na and Latin heartthrob Roberto Carlos, a lantern festival at Santee Lakes, Hooli Fest in La Mesa, and more. On Green Scene, hear about the county actions on community choice energy. And then we'll be re-airing our bookshelf interview with children's book author Annette Tour. Hear where you can get tax help locally and how to stay safe before digging in your garden. And learn about a bill to expand national parks, including Joshua Tree in California. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to the Public News Service. I'm Mary Sherman. Trump's former campaign chair sentenced to just under 4 years for financial fraud, a new push to restore net neutrality, and new research says biofuels policy has backfired, hurting the environment. Those stories and more coming up. We begin with Paul Manafort, President Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, who was sentenced Thursday by a U.S. district judge to 47 months in prison. He was convicted by a Virginia jury last August for bank fraud, tax fraud, and other financial crimes related to the money he earned while working for Ukrainian politicians. The sentence in the highest-profile criminal case mounted by the special counsel's office was far lighter than the 19- to 24-year prison term recommended under advisory sentencing guidelines. The battle over net neutrality is heating up again, as supporters in Congress have just introduced a bill to reinstate Obama-era consumer protections that were lost after the FCC repealed them in 2017.
The Save the Internet Act would bring back rules that prevent internet service providers from slowing down or blocking content they don't like, or offering an internet fast lane to certain sites or users at a higher price. Layla Abdelaziz with the nonprofit Fight for the Future says the feds need to make sure the internet remains an even playing field.
Handing over that power to these handful of corporations is what the FCC's repeal of net neutrality does. This is very antithetical to the openness of the internet that is driving business and free speech and connectivity and community in the 21st century.
The bill is expected to pass the U.S. House, but its future is unclear in the Senate. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai has argued that net neutrality stifles innovation and investment and would drive up consumer prices. A bill last year to bring net neutrality rules to Missouri never made it out of committee in the state legislature. I'm Suzanne Potter.
The Labor Department's considering expanding overtime eligibility to 1.1 million additional workers, raising the salary threshold under which virtually all workers must be paid time and a half whenever their work week exceeds 40 hours to $35,308 from about $24,000 annually now. It's significantly fewer than the 4.2 million people who would have become eligible under a rule blocked by a federal judge that the department issued under President Barack Obama. A new report says the push for biofuels is causing serious environmental damage. Andrea Sears has the story.
The Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS, was intended to reduce reliance on oil imports and cut air pollution. It requires that all gasoline for transportation sold in the United States contain at least 10% ethanol. But the report from the National Wildlife Federation says that has led to the conversion of 1.6 million acres of grassland, shrubland, wetlands, and forest to agricultural production. Aaron Smith, an agricultural economist at the University of California, says that conversion has serious environmental consequences.
That means that you are converting habitat that may have been occupied by various species into cropland. That means you're using more water, using more nitrogen, both of which contribute to pollution.
Supporters of the renewable fuel standard say it has reduced oil imports and boosted farm income, but critics note that the land use changes are releasing 14 million metric tons of carbon a year, accelerating climate change.
A bill that would crack down on protests of infrastructure like fossil fuel pipelines is making its way through the North Dakota legislature. The measure would increase criminal penalties for people who damage, tamper with, or impede the construction of critical infrastructure, defined as pipelines, wells, and other energy infrastructure. The measure also includes a conspirator clause to allow the state to fine organizations that have conspired with individuals on these actions. Heather Smith, who heads the ACLU of North Dakota, says the clause is too vague and would amount to guilt by association.
Affiliation is always loose, right? As the ACLU, I have 5,000 members in North Dakota, and I can tell you that I am not keeping tabs on what they are doing all the time. So in respects that they might be representing the ACLU or think they are acting as part of my organization, that's not something I would ever know of.
Smith argues there's no need for the bill because laws already are in place that prohibit trespassing and damaging public infrastructure. The bill was introduced in response to a 2016 pipeline protest in which protesters shut down oil flow for several hours in North Dakota. Acting Interior Secretary David Bernhardt announced his agency will roll out plans to lift Endangered Species Act protections for the gray wolf. Eric Tegedoff reports.
Wolf numbers have made a big comeback since the species was listed as endangered in the 1970s, but the comeback wasn't spread evenly across the country. Attorney Kristen Boyles in the Northwest Office of Earth Justice says wolves have made a miraculous recovery, but that doesn't mean they aren't imperiled anymore.
It's good that there are more wolves than there used to be, but you can't stop the protections prematurely before you get there, or you simply send a species back into an imperiled state.
If the species is delisted, management will revert to the states. Some livestock groups have pushed for delisting because they see wolves as a nuisance.
Hospitals could be forced to publicize the prices they negotiate with insurers under a new rule proposed by the Trump administration. As of the first of the year, hospitals were required to post sticker prices for services online. Critics say those aren't accurate because insurers negotiate those prices down. Requiring hospitals to publish the actual price would show just how much hospitals are actually charging and how much insurers are paying for health care. I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for newsing and cruising with us here at Public News Service, where we're member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
The National Weather Service has issued a winter weather advisory early this week, with snow predicted above 5,500 feet in the mountains of San Diego, San Bernardino, and Riverside counties. So if you're driving in those areas, folks, use caution, carry chains, and watch for blowing and drifting snow. Locally, we can expect up to a couple of inches of snow, and at some of those higher peaks, as much as a foot. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Across Southern California, February broke records for cold temperatures. Campo averaged just over 42 degrees for the month of February, the chilliest since February 1956. In Ramona, February temperatures averaged 46.8 degrees, tying the all-time record from January 2007. Alpine's average of less than 48 degrees was the coldest since January 1955, and Palomar Mountain, at a brisk 35 degrees, was the coldest since January 1949. Outside of San Diego County, the desert community of Palm Springs averaged around 51 degrees, the coldest since January 1937. The drought has also recharged water levels at most reservoirs across our region. For example, Lake Murray is now at 88% capacity, the lower Otay Reservoir is at 83%, and San Vicente Reservoir is 73% full. Some reservoirs drawn down by the city of San Diego still have a long way to go. Lake Barrett is at 43% of capacity, Lake Sutherland at 39%, El Capitan Reservoir at 33%, and Lake Marina is still only at less than 9% of capacity after being drained down to just 3% at the height of the drought. February's rains also brought some good news across our state. The drought is now officially over in all areas of California, although a few desert regions remain slightly drier than normal, but more rain is forecast ahead. Recharging groundwater aquifers and giving bloom to what may be the most spectacular desert wildflower season in recent years. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Danita Jinks.
This is Jonathan Getz with East County Magazine's local government report from La Mesa. La Mesa City Council had a packed agenda for its late February meeting, taking several important actions. The council unanimously approved creating an ad hoc citizens committee on homelessness, a proposal put forward by Mayor Mark Arapostathis and Vice Mayor Colin Parent. The committee will come up with recommendations for the city on homelessness and will outreach to the interfaith communities and local businesses for their input. Bonnie Baranahoff thanked the council for listening to the community members who asked that a committee be created, citing efforts that La Mesa First United Methodist Church is doing currently to provide services for homeless people in La Mesa. Applications for the Citizens Committee on Homeless will be available soon at the city's website. The council also unanimously approved two ordinances to provide more affordable housing options in La Mesa and help meet state mandates to ease California's housing crisis. The new ordinances will make it easier for property owners to build granny flats, also called accessory dwelling units, as well as junior accessory dwelling units. Mayor Mark Arapostathis stressed the need for granny flats for both family members and people interested in renting units. While most speakers supported the plans, some voiced concerns over potential noise issues and parking shortages. Councilmember Bill Baber explained that under state law, parking space can't be required for any units developed within a half mile of public transportation. Realtor Sarah Carlson spoke in favor of the ordinances, indicating that unemployment is down and homelessness is up. She said the young and elderly people are especially in need of affordable housing. Deborah Norwood Ruan from Housing You Matters, a nonpartisan coalition working to make homes at all price points more economically feasible to develop, also spoke in support of the ordinances to create safer homes for students, seniors, and in-home support services workers. Barrett Tetlow also supported the ordinances but suggested fees be waived to help reduce costs to homeowners. Another resident, Aaron Amerling, expressed general support for the ordinances but voiced concern over the lack of an owner occupancy requirement and the lack of rental length requirements, both restrictions that are allowed under state law if a city chooses to impose them. Amerling voiced concern about a mini-dorm scenario where investors would exploit the rules to build units that could amount to an Airbnb. Councilmember Akilah Weber echoed concerns over the lack of an owner occupancy requirement. She said that renters might be displaced from their units or suffer a change in their quality of life by an owner-investor who decided to build an accessory dwelling unit in a property's backyard. But Vice Mayor Parent, who served on the subcommittee which drafted the ordinance, said the homeowner occupancy requirement was excluded to encourage the development of these types of units. He noted that only about a dozen rentals in La Mesa are listed on Airbnb's online rental service, adding that he doesn't think displacement will be an issue in La Mesa. He added that council could revisit the matter periodically and make changes to the rules as needed. The council also updated the public on implementation of the city's climate action plan adopted a year ago. That plan outlines goals and targets to reduce community-wide greenhouse gas emissions by 15% in 2020 and 53% below 2010 levels by 2035. Implementation measures include community choice aggregation, business and residential specific education and outreach, energy upgrades to municipal operations such as electric vehicle charging stations set to go live next month, and installation of solar photovoltaic systems with already 420 expedited permits. La Mesa Police Captain Matt Nicholas presented a report indicating the police department had maintained 100% response rate for emergency calls and surpassed a state mandate that calls be answered within 15 seconds. He said the department has increased its resources to address mental health concerns in the community through expanded hours for the psychiatric emergency response team. In addition, since last September, Narcan is now carried in every vehicle thanks to a grant program. Narcan helps save lives of those who overdose on fentanyl and other opioids. also protecting officers who come into contact with it as a result of their work. Officers are also interacting more with the homeless population, handing out information including contact sheets listing services available. The City Council also honored Friends of the La Mesa Library on its anniversary, celebrating 50 years of promoting the library and literacy.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The long-awaited Lemon Grove Community Garden is taking root. A grand opening celebration will be held on Saturday, March 30th, from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. The garden site is located at 7730 Central Avenue, at the corner of Olive Street and Central Avenue. Everyone in the Lemon Grove community is invited to come celebrate the city's new option for healthy eating and growing community participation. Individuals, businesses, and organizations in Lemon Grove can join the Lemon Grove Community Garden to have their own raised bed for growing produce. Each bed measures 4 by 8 feet and has access to drip irrigation. There are also special beds available to accommodate seniors and those in wheelchairs. Members also have access to training resources, workshops, and events. Memberships are available at a nominal cost, which can be paid quarterly, and fee waivers are available for low-income individuals. Learn more about the Lemon Grove Community Garden at www.lemongrovecommunitygarden.us. The grand opening event is organized by the Lemon Grove Community Garden, Thrive Lemon Grove, Community Health Independent Partners, and Lemon Grove Heal Zone. Reporting for East County Magazine from Lemon Grove, this is John Fistier.
Santee City Council believes the city needs a brand makeover. So on February 27th, the City Council voted to approve spending $80,000 to hire a consultant to help the city develop its brand. The vote was 4-0, with Councilwoman Laura Koval absent. The consulting firm, North Star Destination Strategies, is based out of Tennessee and touts itself as an expert in helping cities, states, and regions determine the essence of their communities and present that image effectively to the outside world. North Star's founder and CEO, Don McKeeshern, says, "We'll help you tell your story. It's a lot more than a logo. Branding is what they say about you when you're not around." The branding process will include research and public input to help create a tagline and new logo over the next 6 months. The city has the option of hiring North Star for implementation services, which could cost another $20,000. North Star's clients have included states such as Kentucky and cities such as Fargo, North Dakota, which adopted the slogan North of Normal. But Santee Mayor Minto said he contacted a friend in Fargo who indicated he'd never heard of the slogan, so the mayor voiced skepticism over how effective the process was, but voted for the branding makeover anyway. At an earlier council meeting on the issue back on February 13th, some speakers were critical over whether this process would address negative aspects of the city's past. Patty LaBeouf, a longtime Santee resident, said, "When you look at the historical reputation and brand that Santee does have, it includes discrimination in housing. Santee's brand is intolerance, and in some cases, it's overt racism." Evelyn Andrade Hamesfield, a Latina woman who ran unsuccessfully for city council last year, put it more bluntly. "It's no secret that Santee has the nickname Klantee," she said. Councilman Rob McNellis, who defeated Andrade Hamesfield in District 1 elections in November, said derogatory nicknames are common for many cities. He insisted that the derisive name no longer applies to Santee and hasn't for a long time. At the February 27th meeting, Van Collingsworth, founder of Preserve Wild Santee, an environmental group, voiced concerns over costs. "I don't see why we're spending $80,000 for branding," he told the city council. "I'd much rather see that money spent on a new park, on open space, or a new library." In other actions at the February 27th meeting, the council approved applying for a $26 million grant from the Federal Infrastructure for Rebuilding America Fund to pay for part of the estimated $43 million cost for a first phase of improvements to widen State Route 52. The city hopes to win other grants to make a local match of $17 million for the project. The city has set up a Highway 52 coalition to address traffic congestion during commute times. The effort includes accelerating a planned widening of the freeway that isn't scheduled until 2050, with the goal of rolling out the freeway widening over several phases. Reporting for East County Magazine in Santee, this is Jonathan Getz.
Police departments have to turn over records of police misconduct even if those records were created before a new law, Senate Bill 1421, took effect on January 1st. San Diego Superior Court Judge Eddie Sturgeon ruled in favor of the ACLU Foundation of San Diego and Imperial Counties and several San Diego news media outlets. The ACLU Foundation had filed a motion to intervene in a lawsuit filed by several police unions, which had sought to prevent release of older records. Those police unions include San Diego, El Cajon, Carlsbad, Coronado, National City, and Oceanside. David Loy, legal director for the local ACLU Foundation, called the ruling a victory for transparency and accountability. He added, families and the public have a right to know if their local police departments are holding officers accountable when they violate the law or department rules, or if they are putting them back on the streets to do more harm. Until now, California had been one of the nation's most secretive states in protecting police records. The landmark new law gives the public unprecedented access to records documenting police shootings, department findings of sexual assault, and lying by police officers. The ACLU's motion was made on behalf of Flora Rivera, whose brother, Raul Rivera, was shot and killed by multiple law enforcement officers in May 2018. The ACLU fought to defend the Rivera families and the public's right to obtain police records documenting the shooting. Rick Pinkard, the attorney representing the San Diego Police Unions, told Voice of San Diego in January that the police lawsuit challenged only the law's retroactive application. He said the unions haven't ruled out a challenge to the new law itself. Pinkard contends that the public should trust police departments to effectively weed out bad cops, stating, when police officers do bad things, they are disciplined. But that's not always true. A 2015 Justice Department review of the San Diego Police Department found that the officers weren't being held accountable for bad behavior and that the department's internal system for handling misconduct was deeply flawed. The review stemmed from the arrest and prosecution of Anthony Arevalos, an SDPD officer found guilty in 2011 of soliciting sexual bribes from multiple women. Court records show the department long knew Arevalos was a problem but failed to discipline him. A deposition in a civil case revealed that SDPD officer Neil Browder was also never disciplined or even interviewed by the district attorney or internal affairs, shooting an unarmed, mentally ill man, Frieden Nehan, in 2015. Reporting on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Danita Jinks.
San Diego County officials are warning backyard bird owners to watch out for virulent Newcastle disease, a highly contagious bird-killing virus. The disease was found last May in a backyard flock in Los Angeles and has spread to 4 commercial poultry operations. Now the state has expanded a quarantine to include all of Los Angeles County as well as large parts of San Bernardino and Riverside counties near the San Diego County border. Officials said virulent Newcastle disease is spread mainly by people moving sick birds, most often chickens and roosters, and the only way the virus can be stopped is by euthanizing infected birds. Symptoms include coughing, sneezing, nasal discharge, diarrhea, swelling around the eyes and neck, gasping for air, drooping wings, circling, stiffness, tremors, twisting of the neck, and sudden death. If your birds have any of these symptoms, you are urged to immediately contact the California Department of Food and Agriculture's hotline at 866-922-BIRDS or 2473. Virulent Newcastle disease is almost always fatal to birds. both domestic and wild. Chickens are particularly susceptible to the virus, and outbreaks ravaged California egg and poultry industry in 1971 and again in the early 2000s. There is no cure, and even vaccinated flocks can carry the virus. Virulent Newcastle disease is not harmful to people, although in rare cases, people directly exposed to the virus can develop mild fevers and eye infections. The virus does not harm food if eggs and poultry are cooked properly. The virus is extremely contagious among birds, but can also be carried to flocks and from place to place by people on clothing, shoes, automobile tires, and equipment. Health officials said local bird owners can help protect birds by following these precautions. Make sure that everyone working around birds washes their hands and scrubs off their boots before and after leaving a poultry area. Clean and disinfect tires and equipment before moving them on or off your property. Isolate any birds returning from shows for 30 days before placing them back with the rest of the flock. Voluntarily reduce or limit transportation of birds as a protective measure to prevent exposing them to other flocks and birds. Previous outbreaks of virulent Newcastle disease in California have been eradicated, but at great cost. A virulent Newcastle disease outbreak in California in 1971 forced nearly 12 million birds to be killed at a cost of $56 million. In 2002 and 2003, an outbreak that started in Southern California and spread to Arizona, Nevada, and Texas forced 3.16 million birds to be euthanized at a cost of $161 million. Nearly 1 million birds have been euthanized in the current outbreak, which to date has not impacted San Diego County. Regional officials hope to keep this deadly scourge out of our area, with help from the public to protect not only backyard birds, such as chicken and exotic pets, but also wild birds. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
The City of El Cajon Teen Coalition is now accepting applications for its Youth of the Year Award, recognizing outstanding youth who go above and beyond serving their community. This annual award is given to one middle school and one high school student each year, honoring them for their leadership abilities and or their quality of level of community service. Final awards will be based on dedication and commitment beyond what may be required by the school and its effect on the community. The students will be recognized for their services accomplished in calendar year 2018. Nominees must live in El Cajon or attend a school in El Cajon City's limit. Nominations must be received by March 21st. If you would like to nominate a deserving student, you can pick up an application at the city's recreation department at City Hall, at any of the city's recreation centers, or on the city's website at cityofelcajon.us. Awards will be presented by winning students at the upcoming El Cajon City Council meeting. Reporting for East County Magazine in El Cajon, this is Danita Jinks.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Jonathan Getz.
And this is Miriam Raftery.
This week's Destination East County includes Baroque, Renaissance, and classical music in El Cajon. Arlo Guthrie performing in Poway. A St. Patrick's Day lucky adventure at Fort Cross in Santa Isabel. Hooli Fest and more St. Patrick's Day activities at Grossmont Center in La Mesa.
Plus, we'll have details on Shanana at Sequan, the Danny Green Trio at Cuyamaca College, Les Miserables at Steel Canyon High School, the Thousand Lights Festival coming up at Santee Lakes, Arbor Day in El Cajon, Latin heartthrob Roberto Carlos in concert at SDSU, and an off-Broadway live performance of The Bridge in Santee.
So stay tuned for all of these events and more.
A Celebration of Music spring concert on March 16th at 4 p.m. will feature the combined forces of San Diego State University choirs, San Diego School of Creative and Performing Arts choirs, plus a battalion of brass, organ, and percussion. The performance will be at the First Presbyterian Church in El Cajon. The musical groups will perform Renaissance, Baroque, classical, and romantic music. For tickets, you can call 619-442-2583.
Famed folk musician Arlo Guthrie will perform a special concert at the Poway Center for the Performing Arts on Saturday, March 16th at 8 p.m. Son of activist singer and songwriter Woody Guthrie, Arlo Guthrie's career in music has spanned nearly 60 years. He first performed in public at age 13, and his debut song, Alice's Restaurant, became a protest anthem. He grew up around such well-known artists as Pete Seeger, with whom he collaborated for over 40 years. For tickets, visit powaycenter.com.
You're invited to a St. Patrick's Day lucky adventure on March 17th at 2 p.m. at Fort Cross Old-Timey Adventures in Santa Isabel, just outside of Julian. Learn some history about St. Patrick as you kick up your heels with an Irish jig and jug band music. See snakes, like those driven out of Ireland, in a reptile show. Target some four-leaf clovers with slingshots, enjoy a petting zoo, and venture into a land of leprechaun magic as you seek some special treasures in a scavenger hunt. For information, you can visit fortcross.com.
Several St. Patrick's Day activities are planned in La Mesa in March. Hooli's Public House is celebrating 20 years in East County, with the return of Hooli Fest on Saturday and Sunday, March 16th and 17th at Hooli's Grossmont Center location. The hours Saturday are 5 p.m. to midnight and Sunday 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tickets are available in advance at Hooli's or at the door. On Sunday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on March 17th, Grossmont Center kicks off a St. Patrick's Day family fun run, followed by a kids' concert at 10 a.m. Later on Sunday, Grossmont Center will host Whiskey Ridge and the 80s All-Stars in concert.
Rock and roll doo-wop legends Shanana will appear in concert at Sequan's Live Up Close Theater on March 17th at 8 p.m. The group rose to stardom in the movie Grease, the highest-grossing musical film of all time, performing six songs on that soundtrack. The band's piano player, Screamin' Scott Simon, co-wrote the song Sandy for John Travolta to perform. The group also starred in four seasons of their own TV series, The Shanana Show. Shanana's latest album, Greaser High School Hop, showcases 25 of the greatest dance hits of the 50s and 60s, including the bop, twist, the stroll, the monkey, the jerk, the cha-cha, and the hokey pokey. Tickets are available at sequan.com.
The city of El Cajon will hold its 30th annual Arbor Day celebration on Saturday, March 16th at 8 a.m. at Hillside Park, receiving the Tree City USA Award. Volunteers are invited to help plant 20 trees. Arborists will be on hand to provide tips on tree planting, plus you can get conservation information at displays by SDG&E, Waste Management, the Helix Water District, and the San Diego Regional Urban Forests Council.
The Danny Green Trio will perform at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego on Thursday, March 21st at 7:30 p.m. This jazz group's debut CD won the 2009 San Diego Music Award for Best Jazz Album. The trio is led by pianist, composer, and Grossmont College music instructor Danny Green, and also includes Grossmont College music instructor and jazz bassist extraordinaire Justin Grinnell, plus the versatile Julian Cantelme on drums. Visit cuyamaca.edu for tickets and a full list of concerts.
Steel Canyon High School in Spring Valley presents the world's longest-running musical, Les Miserables, March 20th through the 24th. This modern classic, based on Victor Hugo's novel, features one of the most memorable musical scores of all time. The production includes live orchestral accompaniment. The musical, set in 19th century France, features John Valdin, released from years of unjust imprisonment, as he struggles to start a new life and gain redemption amid turbulent times, including a Paris student uprising. Poignant, epic, and uplifting, Les Misérables illustrates the triumph of the human spirit epitomized in the song, Do You Hear the People Sing? Discount tickets can be reserved and purchased online at schscougars.org or at the box office.
The Thousand Lights Festival will be held at Santee Lakes on March 23rd from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., featuring a beautiful spectacle of twinkling lights from floating lanterns as well as lively entertainment and food. For tickets and more information, you can visit thousandlightsfestival.com, and that's 1000lightsfestival.com.
Roberto Carlos, Brazil's number one singer, will be performing on Sunday, March 24th at 8 p.m. at the Cal Coast Credit Union Open Air Theater at San Diego State University. The Latin music idol, revered in many nations for his romantic music and sensual performances, returns after 5 years to stage his Amor Sin Limite, or Unlimited Love, in cities across the U.S. Carlos had written over 600 ballads and has recorded duets with Jennifer Lopez and Alejandro Sanz. For tickets, visit BrazilianNights.com, and that's Knights spelled N-I-T-E-S, or call 818-566-1111.
Off-Broadway Live Theater in Santee will present The Bridge, which opened March 2nd and runs through April 13th. A special showing on March 24th will benefit homeless children and teens at Father Joe's Villages. The musical focuses on six people whose lives were forever changed by what happened one night on a bridge. The bridge knows their secrets, and during a reunion of their high school football championship season, everyone will be there, and the bridge is waiting. For tickets and details, you can visit offbroadwaylive.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
Now, if you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or our Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the Green Scene Report. San Diego County Supervisors have voted unanimously to study the idea of buying and selling electricity to give county residents an alternative to having to buy it from the region's utility, San Diego Gas and Electric. Under a community choice program, residents would still have the option to stay with SDG&E if they choose to do so. The board directed county staff to come back in October with a feasibility study that would include several options, including an option of deciding not to create a program, plus pros and cons, and a business plan for the board to consider. Community choice energy programs, also known as community choice aggregation, allow cities and counties to buy and/or generate electricity for their residents and businesses. The City of San Diego and several other local cities are also weighing banding together to form a community choice program. The board's vote also directed county staff to update the board and the public about the study's progress every 2 months. Updates that could include speakers from other counties that have created their own plans, and groups that have studied community choice energy programs. Board Chairwoman Diane Jacob, who proposed the idea of creating a community choice energy program along with County Supervisor Nathan Fletcher, said the time was right for the county to consider such a program. Jacob says community choice aggregation had come a long way since Marin County became the first in California to create a program in 2010, that 19 programs were operating today, including the City of Solana Beaches, and that 8 cities in San Diego County were also considering creating plans and perhaps even a regional joint powers authority. Jacob says that the County of San Diego has been bypassing SDG&E to buy its own electricity since 2001 and has saved taxpayers $23 million since that time, including $3.4 million alone last year. Supervisor Christine Kaspar previously voiced doubts about the program, but voted with colleagues for the study. "I support clean energy," she said previously, the San Diego Union-Tribune reported. "I support lower prices, but what I can't support is getting into the energy business without a plan." Supervisor Jim Desmond had earlier questioned whether a private entity might be more efficient than the government at providing energy, stating, "I'm just wondering if this could be contracted out to a separate entity that would be part of the Joint Powers Authority that wouldn't have to have county employees or maybe just limited county employees." Supervisor Nathan Fletcher says that it was appropriate for the county to study whether it could pass those kinds of savings along to residents, and that data suggested a community choice energy program could also increase use of renewable energy sources like wind and solar power.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Anat Tor, award-winning author and illustrator of four children's picture books, I Dream of Puffy Clouds, Mama Says, Mama's Bag, and Mama's Shoe. In addition to writing, my guest sings and has been lead singer in a local jazz and blues band called Swingbuck. She's also just completed writing and singing 12 children's songs. Welcome, Annette. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you for having me.
Let's begin with your latest picture book, I Dream of Puffy Clouds. I know that in this bedtime story, kids can be kids. They hop away on clouds, they eat ice cream puffs, and float off into outer space. It's a book of the imagination instead of technology. So what motivated you to write it, and how have kids responded?
Well, what motivated me to write is, I think, my fascination of clouds. I think daily when I look up in the sky and if I see a beautiful cloud, I kind of like to let my imagination go and say, oh, that kind of looks like an ice cream puff, or that kind of looks like cotton candy. Maybe I just like sweets. But part of it is when, you know, I have a still vivid memories of my childhood. And so I think I have a combination of how I used to think back then and now my six-year-old. So it happened at a time when he was flying away with his dad to visit his grandparents. And I promised that I would write him a book a day until he would see me. So I was supposed to meet up with him 30 days later, which was a long time.
30 books.
Yeah, so I said, okay, 30 days, I need at least 30 pages. Of course, it's not that long, but so I started drawing about the fascination with clouds. What could you do on a cloud when you're on a plane? You know, the clouds you see below, I've always used to imagine, where are the signs? How do the planes know where to navigate? So all that part of the imagination brought onto the book, you know, to have signs on top of the clouds, and, you know, you could actually hop on a cloud or not fall through it. So it's a feel-good bedtime story with good dreams and waking up to a good reality.
So the playful side of you is very strong.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you lie there with your child, or have you looking at the clouds?
We do on a sunny day. You know, if I ever come across a beautiful cloud, I just want to stop and say, oh my goodness, look at that cloud. It's just beautiful. What does that look like? Sometimes they're massive.
Well, your book, The Rainbow Animals, that was your first multimedia production. It has a booklet, CD, audiobook, and DVD. What led you to go in that direction? And what was it like to do this? Would you recommend it for other children's authors?
Well, first of all, it was a lot of work. So
I bet.
The writing part of the book and the illustrating did take a long time. And then to actually write 12 songs to go along with each character.
Sure.
And then I animated it as well. And of course, I had my children sing in the CD. So putting all that time in together, not just myself, but my family, we put in a lot of hours into the actual production. So I definitely would recommend it to other authors if they would like to add that type of element to their books, because I think whenever you mix music and art and a nice story, it gives a nice overall nice package.
But you really taught it all to yourself, the program.
The program I taught all to myself. I spent many sleepless nights. Mm-hmm. Also, the motivation to work with something new is kind of, you know, a big factor of it. Mm-hmm. And I just love it. So it wasn't, I didn't feel like work. It just felt like I was having fun the whole time. So I didn't really even notice how much work went into it. But looking back, it was actually years. Wow. Years of work.
Motivation. Let's talk about your book, Mama's Shoe. I love the title. It won honorable mention at the New England Book Festival, and I understand that it's based on your experiences with your son. And I couldn't help but notice that 3 out of 4 of your books have Mama on the cover. So what is it about parenthood that motivates you so much, that makes it such a theme in your books?
Yes, that's true. I think it's because it's what I know best right now, because I'm a mom. And, you know, when you have little children, the cutest things come out of their mouths.
Yes.
And so Mama's Shoe, for instance, what inspired that is one day I was running late and I was looking for my shoe. And I said to my younger son at the time, who was about 2, 2.5, can you help Mama find her shoe? And as I was looking for my shoe, I was looking at what he was doing, and he just was, you know, distracted by whatever he came across.
Of course.
As soon as he would find a toy, he would start playing with that toy. Mm-hmm. And then I kept repeating, where's Mama's shoe? Is it under the bed? No, it's not under the bed. Is it in the closet? No, it's not in the closet. Is it in the toy chest? No, it's not in the toy chest. Where could Mama's shoe be? And then I said, hey, this sounds like a book.
That's a great story. Let's talk about your work as an illustrator. You illustrate your books as well. What's your process of doing that? Do you write your books first and then draw? Do you do it in the other direction? Do you base your characters on how real people look or make it up? What's your process?
I think it's a combination. I don't have one set way. I think it changes, but overall, I think I do like to create a storyboard. So if mm-hmm. I know what I'm going to be writing about, I kind of take a piece of paper and divide mm-hmm. it up into little rectangles. And then I will say, okay, I want it to start like this. And then I'll do a little quick sketch. And I'll put, so if I have an idea, I like to put it down right away so mm-hmm. I don't forget it. And then I'll make a little storyboard, and then it could change. I alter it as I write along. Sometimes I'll illustrate before I write, and sometimes I'll write, and then I'll illustrate according to what I wrote. So it's a combination.
And you enjoy the illustrating?
I love the illustrating. I have to say I have gotten better at it. When I first started, I would have to redo, and I would say, okay, this doesn't look right. And sometimes I would show it to one of my kids, and they would say, that looks strange. And I'm like, what looks strange? Okay, that arm looks funny. So I would change the arm, mm-hmm. or I would change the facial expression. And yes, sometimes I do base it on people mm-hmm. I actually know, or just a little part of what they are, mm-hmm. like some part of character that comes out from mm-hmm. them, or some type of cute facial expression that I like. I'll say, okay, I want my character to have that expression.
Mm-hmm. And do you use paint, or you do the art on the computer?
So I use a combination of markers and pastels. Okay. I like very vibrant colors, mm-hmm. strong colors. So I started when I did the rainbow animals, it was all pastels and oil pastel, so it got extremely messy. I think now I like to use a combination of dry pastels with special type of markers, and the combination together, I think, is the style that I most like.
Very colorful and beautiful. In addition to creating books, you've had an amazingly versatile career of teaching and modeling and singing and math. But I'm fascinated about the music, too. Tell us a little bit about your songs, what they're about, and actually, why don't you sing us a few bars?
Okay, I'll sing Ziggy Wiggy from the Rainbow Animals, and he is a three-toothed giraffe, and his character loves to laugh. He's 22 feet tall, he's not too shy at all. He wears his hair slicked back, he's got a brush for that. And all the rainbow animals love him.
Oh, that's great. So this song and 11 other songs is on a CD.
Yes.
Okay, great. So you're basically creating an entire world, not just a book.
Yes, I guess if you look at it that way, yes.
Your book, Mama Says, has an unusual premise about a three-year-old child's ambition for college. What prompted that book?
That was an actual conversation I had in the car with my kids. And at the time, the youngest was about 2.5, almost 3, and the other one was in kindergarten. And I guess what prompted this book was conversation with my older son at the time. I asked him, you know, in the car, did you do your homework? No, I didn't. I don't want to do my homework. And so I said, well, you know, if you don't do your homework, then you won't do well in elementary school. And if you won't do well in elementary school, you won't do well in middle school, which means you won't do well in high school. And then you won't go to college. And I realized I was going a little bit off. You know, he was only 5.5 years right. old. And so then my younger one, who was almost 3, looked at me and said, what's college? And then I kind of said, oh, that's too funny. So I said, well, college is where you learn to be anything you want to be, like a doctor or a dentist. And he looked at me really seriously and he said, when I go to college, I want to learn to become a dragon.
Okay.
And so then I said, okay. And years later, of course, I looked back at that and I said, I think I could make that into a children's sure. story as well. You know, of course, add in a little more imagination and take that context of the conversation and just mm-hmm. expand on it.
Great story. One last question. What's next? What are you working on?
I'm actually presently working on another Mama's Bees.
Mama's Bees.
Another title, yes. They don't all have the title Mama's, but this one does. Basically, it's also based on a true story, and I'm going to exaggerate a little bit on the characters.
Looking forward to it. Well, that's all the time we have for now, but thank you so much for joining us. If you would like more information about Anat Tor, please visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Anat, A-N-A-T, dot Tor, T-O-U-R, dot 3. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
If you need help with your taxes, the AARP Tax Aid Program can help. They're offering free tax preparation and e-filing for senior citizens, low-income residents, and others in need in the East County area. Tax sites will be open the week of February 3rd and continue until April 15th. The AARP Tax Aid Program will be available at the following locations: the El Cajon Library, College Avenue Senior Center, Alpine Senior Center, La Mesa Adult Enrichment Center, and Edgemoor Hospital. Two locations that have offered this service in the past, Lemon Grove Senior Center and the Salvation Army, will not be open this year. Past clients at these two sites are welcome to make an appointment at any of the other locations.
This is Eberena with a public service announcement from San Diego Gas and Electric. SDG&E has issued a reminder to the public about the importance of calling 811 before you dig. Calling 811 or underground service alert will help avoid possible injury or damage to hidden gas lines or service interruption. Scott Ferguson, Vice President of Gas Operations at SDG&E, states, "Damaging a natural gas line can pose a significant safety risk and disrupt natural gas service. We ask everyone, whether digging at a construction site or at their homes, to make a quick 811 phone call to Underground Service Alert to have utility-owned lines marked for free. Before digging, residents, business owners, and contractors should mark the proposed excavation area and call 811 at least 2 business days before the project is scheduled to begin. Underground Service Alert will contact all local utilities for free to have them locate and mark the underground lines, pipes, and cables they own. For more information about safe digging or to submit an online request, visit digalert.org. If you suspect a gas emergency or have questions regarding a gas odor or carbon monoxide, call SDG&E immediately at 800-411-7343. It's important to keep in mind that natural gas is flammable and that something as simple as a spark can serve as an ignition source. Use your sense of sight, hearing, and smell and any of the following signs to alert you to the presence of a gas leak. Look for the following: dirt or water being blown in the air, dead or dying vegetation over or near pipeline areas, a fire or explosion near a pipeline, exposed pipeline after an earthquake, fire, flood, or other disaster, and bubbles in puddles outdoors after a rain. You should listen for an unusual sound such as a hissing, whistling, or roaring sound near a pipeline, and you should smell for the distinctive odor of natural gas. However, although SDG&E adds a distinctive odor to natural gas to aid in the detection of leaks, you should not rely on your sense of smell alone to determine if you have a gas leak. For more safety information, visit sdge.com/safety.
If you've ever fished off a pier, swum in a public pool, played ball on a local field, or hiked in a state park, you've likely benefited from the Land and Water Conservation Fund. That program could be permanently reauthorized next week as part of a massive public lands package before the U.S. House. The Natural Resources Management Act would expand Joshua Tree and Death Valley National Parks, add new off-road vehicle recreation areas in San Bernardino County, and add 80 miles of scenic rivers plus 700,000 acres of land to conservation and recreation areas across California. J.R. Young with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers of California says the fund has touched every corner of the state since its inception in 1964.
There's not a county in California that has not benefited from a land and water conservation project. The list is massive. It's just one of those critical core funding components that unfortunately not a lot of people know about.
Over the years, the fund has directed $2.4 billion to projects at places up and down the state, from Humboldt Redwoods State Park to the Lake Merritt Bicycle Path in Oakland to a sports complex in Merced County to Embarcadero Pier in San Diego. The fund uses no taxpayer dollars, only revenues from offshore oil and gas drilling in federal waters. Maite Arce with the Hispanic Access Foundation says the thousands of local parks helped by the Land and Water Conservation Fund are especially important to urban, low-income communities, so it's crucial to fully fund it going forward.
It's only been fully funded at its annual $900 million cap twice in 54 years. So on average, Congress authorizes Land and Water Conservation Fund to receive only about 46% of its allowed amount.
Its backers say the public lands package would also greatly benefit California's $92 billion outdoor recreation industry. It passed the Senate last week by an overwhelming margin of 92-8. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.